Line, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. And joining us now is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, we just heard from another Tim Kelly, Titans offensive coordinator. And he was asked, do you feel comfortable about where this wide receiver core is at? And he said, in very eloquently, yep. But I just don't think I believe him, Tim. What in the world are the Titans going to do with this receiving core?
Well, I mean, listen, you know, there's got to be his answer, right? I guess you could expound on it. But, look, I think in terms of the receiver room, look, you got to hope that Treylon Burks really takes a big step forward. You know, that Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, you know, kind of, you know, improves, that Kyle Phillips, you know, does a good job playing inside, that, you know, maybe some young guys step up. You also have to just assume that, you know, maybe the receiver room isn't set as we sit here at the end of May in terms of what it may look like when you're playing games in September and after that. So, but I think the approach a lot of times, especially with an offensive coordinator who's not going to have a ton of say in terms of the guys that are, brought in. Mm-hmm. I think you just, you try to do the best with the guys that you have, and I'm sure that'll be the approach that Tim Kelly takes.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. From a quarterback's perspective, when you're looking at a receiver room that's young, fairly inexperienced, coming off of injuries, how does a veteran quarterback like Ryan Tannehill kind of evaluate that situation?
Yeah, I think what you do is you just you try to be as positive as you can, and you try to find, you know, what you do have and the good parts of what you have. I think I've told this story to you guys before, but, you know, I just remember being in training camp with the Giants, and, you know, the receiver room wasn't, wasn't great. Amani Toomer was at the end of his career. Plexico Burress had been brought in, and really they were looking for another receiver. And so they drafted Sonoris Moss, and they had drafted Steve Smith, and they had drafted a bunch of these players, and none of them really were working out. And, you know, next thing you know, the quarterback coach at the time asked Eli who he likes, and he's like, look, I like David Tyree. Like, I feel like I can trust him. I feel like I know he's not the fastest guy. I know he drops the ball sometimes, but he shows up where I'm expecting him to show up. And there was kind of this disagreement about, you know, the receivers and who, you know, should probably make the team and who shouldn't. And it kind of took a quarterback, it took a quarterback saying, look, I know you guys don't like this guy that much, but I trust him and like him. And look, they ended up keeping him. Obviously, he makes an amazing catch in a Super Bowl and all that. It's not always going to work out that way, but I think what you need is you need to find a coach or a quarterback that really is seeing, like, what a guy can do and trying to do the best with that.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, I saw the story today about Austin Ekeler. It really got me thinking. I was looking at, you know, the production he's had, where he ranks among running backs. I think it's 11th. It looks like he's going to be a pretty valuable commodity possibly next year with, you know, the Chargers are going to have to find a way to re-sign Justin Herbert. It just has me thinking philosophically, like, what's the right amount to pay a running back? They've gotten a lot of value out of Austin Ekeler. I'm sure he's a little frustrated that he looks around and, you know, he's done as well as anybody the last couple of years, but he's probably not getting paid as well as some of his peers.
Yeah, and look, I understand his frustration. Guy who didn't come into the league, you know, like a Ezekiel Elliott or something like that. I mean, look, I think I've said this before, but my reaction in terms of running backs, look, I wouldn't want to be paying a running back at the top of the market. I wouldn't want to be. And that doesn't mean that people that do can't have success, right? Like, obviously the Titans have paid Derrick Henry a lot of money and they've had success with them. There are other teams that decide to reward running backs. I mean, Christian McCaffrey has turned out to be a great find for the 49ers. Like, so I think that, like, it obviously can be done and people do it. I just I want to do it because I do think you can find value. Now, I think you'll miss out on the top echelon guy by doing that, but I think you can do it. So, like, if I were the Chargers, with everything that you said, I probably would have been looking to maybe trade Austin Eckler or not give him a new deal or, you know, incentives onto his deal. Like, I would maybe try to beat the market with somebody like Ezekiel Elliott, who's had 22 rushing touchdowns the last couple of years and doesn't seem to be able to find a home in a young running back room with an offensive coordinator that's got a history with Zeke. Like, that's the type of way I would try to address the running back room.
Just from Eckler's perspective, if he plays out the last year with the Chargers and then he hits the market, I would say it's fairly rare that a guy with his production would hit the market like that. But as we said, you just got done saying, I don't know if a lot of teams are looking to pay big money to a 29-year-old running back, even a guy like him. But so what do you think the market would be like for him?
You know, I'm not sure what it would be. Like, when we look at running backs that are free agents that can't find landing, like Leonard Fournette's out there and Ezekiel Elliott's out there. And, you know, I think because running backs that have hit the market have been signed and then it's not, or have been close to hitting the market, and there's not a demand for them, like, I think it's impossible to say. Like, if the Titans said, look, we're willing to trade Derrick Henry, do you think it would? Because those rumors have been out there.
Right.
That, hey, Derrick Henry's getting traded. Like, there weren't teams that were running to say, hey, like, oh, yeah, hey, we won them. Look, when Aaron Rodgers is like, hey, I'm not playing here, you know, they're, even though, like, spots are filled, like, people are still trying to figure out how they can make the Aaron Rodgers thing work. Like, so I don't think that teams in general want to be paying running backs at the top of the market. I think sometimes they get forced to do it because they don't have a better solution at the position. And then, you know, unfortunately, because of the nature of the position and the wear and tear, the fact that we're extending the season, the fact that, you know, running backs in general have been, you know, used a little bit differently in the league. To say, what is the market? I don't know what it is. It's kind of one of those things I think ends up being really surprising.
Yeah, and you, in theory, would have Derrick Henry hitting the market next year in some form. So that could be a very interesting year for running backs to sort of answer that question. But I think you and I are on the same page. I suspect that it may not be what they're hoping, especially at the stage of their careers, as productive as they've been. These are outstanding guys, right? These are about as good. These are the guys you're picking at the top of your fantasy board.
Oh, look, listen, no doubt. I mean, look, in fantasy, you're just comparing to other backs. So, like, there'd be backfields where, you know, somebody's just sharing, you know, you're sharing the workload. Like, the guy might be a good back, but he's sharing the workload. I just think that, like, ultimately, you know, somebody like Eckler, who's provided a ton of production and value, you know, the question ends up being, hey, he wants some long-term security. Well, he's 28 years old. Like, there's essentially been, you know, only a handful of running backs that you can say, look, he's different. He turned 30 and he still was great. And he still had, you know, a bunch of production. I think that's how teams look at it. You know, what Bill Polian said to me one time, he's like, look, here's the deal with, you know, guys in free agency, it's age and injury history that are the real drivers, but then, you know, the position as well. And so, like, that's, you know, you just look at it. Like, you look at Derrick Henry to you know, the point for him. He's made a lot of money. He right now is 29 years old. Now, he obviously is rare. He's a 6'3", 250, 60-pound running back. But, like, does somebody want to sign him to a deal where they're guaranteeing him a bunch of money and then spreading it out on a 3-year deal to the point where he's a running back at 34 years old, 33? Like, I don't see that happening.
More with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. Caroline, Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game in the Game Nashville app. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins us now. Tim, we learned from the NFL owners' meetings yesterday that you can now carry a third quarterback on game day without burning a roster spot. What do you think of the new rule, and what do you think that means for Malik Willis and the Titans quarterback situation?
Yeah, well, I like the rule. I think they should have never gotten rid of it. You know, the expense that it takes from a standpoint of, like, carrying another guy or that type of thing, I think it was silly they ever removed it. And I think it's good for Malik Willis, because there will be teams that, and I think it's the case for every team, they have zero, you know, desire really for their third quarterback to ever play. Yet at the same time, you know, they may feel like they can develop them, and it'll be good for them to be around and practice and see other guys. And, you know, you have a chance to improve. So I do think that the whole third quarterback, you know, emergency third quarterback, you know, encourages teams to keep a third quarterback rather than discouraging them to, which, you know, is what happened with the rule. I mean, so many teams just carrying two and a practice squad guy. And so I think in doing this, there's a bit more of an investment into developing a quarterback. And I think it's a good thing. And then on top of it, I think it's probably, you know, a better scenario than what we saw last year in the postseason after Brock Purdy was injured. So, I think those things are all factors. And then I would just add, you know, with the way that, you know, guys can be removed because of today's concussion protocol, like that is even more of a reason why having a quarterback that's an emergency third quarterback is more necessary.
I totally agree. I feel like we were robbed of what was supposed to be such a great NFC championship game. We don't need to be – I love Christian McCaffrey. We don't need to be seeing him taking snaps under center. Tim Hasselbeck is with us. That does add, at least to me, a little bit more of a difficulty for coaches going through OTAs and training camp and trying to organize the snaps in training camp, dividing those amongst three different quarterbacks.
Kelly was very interesting on his answers today, because Teron was saying, like, how do you do that? He's like, yeah, that's the question.
It's a good question.
Like, yeah, it's because it's hard, right? And Tim, you've been saying this, right? It's hard to get three guys a lot of work.
I just think that I think there's probably this perception of, like, hey, guys are practicing all day long. And, you know, there's a limited time that you're out on the field, and there's a lot that you have to cover. And, you know, things are complex, and you need to be really good on details. You know, that whole saying about, you know, it's a game of inches. I mean, it's really, you know, making sure that the guys are playing have kind of, you know, like there's no stone unturned. And so when you do that and you say, like I brought it up, I think last week, where you say, all right, so say you have a team period where you're going to run 12 plays. Well, some of those plays are going to be for the offense. Some of those plays are going to be to kind of, you know, service the defense in a way to, you know, let them see something that it's important for them to see. And so now when you're working on, you know, those reps, well, how do you divvy them up? And then when you get to 7-on-7, how do you divvy those up? And, oh, by the way, hey, we've got a young receiving core that we need to play better. And so shouldn't Ryan be getting the snaps with them? And we have a rookie that we've invested in. And so he should get the rest. But what about the guys in a second year who's really talented? When do we give them those reps? And so it's really hard. And that's why, look, I've said it before, that you get better by playing. It's easier to get better by playing than by watching. But you need the guys that are not getting the reps to do everything they can to try to improve when they're just watching somebody else go.
Tim, there's a rule change that hit, and I thought it was interesting about the kickoff, right? That, if I understand this correctly, it's now more like the college game, right? If you just fair catch the kickoff, whether you're on the 2-yard line, the 10-yard line, or the 15, you get the ball at the 25, correct?
Correct.
So it's almost like it's a touchback. It's the same whether it's a touchback in the end zone or you just fair catch it at the 5. You just simply have to catch the ball. So I guess and they said this particular move, they estimate, could reduce concussions by 15%, which I get. If you can reduce the number, that's a good thing. But at what point do we just say, let's just not have kickoffs. Let's put the ball at the 25 and just go from there.
Yeah, I think we're really close to that. You just look at it's the play that has been adjusted the most, right? Used to be get a running head start. They're changing, they've changed where you've kicked from. They clearly have tried to encourage touchbacks as much as possible. And so, I think with that, you just have to look at it and say, look, there's a problem with this play. And last year when we at ESPN met with the league and kind of had our health and safety meeting, just as a broadcast partner, kind of meet with them and talk about varying things, points of emphasis, officiating, but also player safety. And look, they're able to track this. They're able to track the significance of, an impact of a hit. They're able to track, the plays which guys are hurt. And look, it's not just concussions. It's also, something else that's been brought up a lot is artificial turf versus grass and lower leg injuries. But it is widely known that kickoff is the play where guys get injured the most, and primarily head injuries. The wedge has been removed, all of that stuff. So I do think it's just a matter of time. And I think the league, what they're trying to do is they're trying to change it in a way where you're kind of baby stepping to make it a safer play. But ultimately, like, the end result might just be, look, it's just too violent and dangerous, and we had to come up with another solution. So rather than saying, like, well, we're scrapping it all together, if you look at what happened, I guess it was the XFL where, guys were starting 5 yards apart. Okay, well, like, that looks much more like punt return than kickoff return. So I get that people aren't going to like it, but, at the same time, the head injuries are the thing that's the biggest threat to football, and I think they're just trying to eliminate them.
Right. But, what's interesting is when they first tried to curtail the concussions, what started happening, I thought – that would just, I think it was this way for the first part, right? People were just booming the kickoff into the end zone. It was easy for the kickers to hit it into the end zone. But then people were like, well, wait a minute. If we kick it high and short and put it on an angle, they'll catch it and they have to return it, and we'll pin them and we'll get it inside the 25. I mean, that's just the thinking of a special teams coach. And that may have created some unintended consequences, right? So I still think the coaches will try to figure out ways. How do we get that average? And can we pin him inside the 25? Like, that's the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you that, like, there are going to be people that are like, all right, well, how can we use this to our advantage? Like, how can we, is there something better than that? I think what ultimately will happen is maybe somebody will. I don't know what that plan would be. But what will end up happening, I think, is the league will then make the adjustment once again, so much so where it's just like you're just forcing the decision from coaches of saying, like, there's not a better way to circumvent this. And the understanding is it's because guys are getting concussed on this play. And so you also are putting your own players at risk for concussion on a play like this. And that should be a deterrent that's bigger than whatever your game strategy is, right?
That's like, a great mindset. It seems like coaches don't think that way. They don't think, well, let me make sure my guys are safe. Like, they're thinking more, if I, I'll be promoted. I'll be the greatest special teams coach ever if I can be number one in the league of pinning teams back inside the 20. When if I just kick it into the end zone, it'll be at the 25.
Yeah, well, here's what I would say to that is that there was a point when, when things changed in terms of where defensive backs could hit guys going over the middle and this defenseless receiver thing, like there was a feeling that around the league that there were coaches that were basically saying to their players, look, when you get fined for this, it's just like the cost of doing business. Like, you play in the secondary. Like, so there was a feeling that, like, that was the reaction from coaches. And with that being the case, like, nothing will ever change, right? Like, if the guy who's responsible for your playing time is like, yeah, I get it. You got a penalty and you got a fine. But like, I don't really know what else to tell you. Like it eventually takes a while to get everybody on board. Like sometimes the coaches get on board first and then the players come around. Sometimes the players get on board and the coaches have to come around. This to me is a scenario where, yeah, I think the coaches are just going to have to come around to this being important.
Okay, speaking of player safety, like I'm sure the players are not happy about the Amazon flexing games to the Thursday night. So, once again, an example of the business outweighs maybe the betterment of the players.
No doubt. And look, I think that whether it's Thursday, whether it's a late game on a Monday night and what your turnaround late in the season is to play on a Saturday, whether it's, flying back and forth across the country, all of those things multiple times. Like, I mean, there's definitely a feeling, even as a guy who's a former player, somebody that's not going through it, there is no question that there is a feeling that's like, man, like, we're talking out of both sides of our mouth with player safety, yet talking about, I mean, look, playing multiple Thursday games, which means multiple short weeks, when we know and we've been told and it's the Tua situation that, a concussion, a blow to the head and then a repeated blow to the head in close proximity of when the previous one happened is as dangerous as anything that we know about in the league. So, look, I don't feel like it should be something that we're doing. We're clearly doing it. And, I think ultimately it is bad for the players.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, we appreciate you as always. We'll chat next Tuesday.
Sounds good. See you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. And that's what I want to get into coming up next is the new rule that the NFL can flex Thursday night games. I felt some type of way about it, and honestly, I think I might be flip-flopping. We'll explain coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
We don't know how the games are going to play out, but we do know, the matchups on paper look great. And, I mean, we get the look at those first three games, and NBC or Fox or CBS, anybody would take those. Minnesota at Philadelphia, Giants at San Francisco, and then Detroit's kind of the it team this year at Green Bay. I mean, that's a hell of a way to come out of the gate. And then later on in the season, Baltimore and Cincinnati, they played that classic playoff game last year, the wild card round. And then your boy Aaron, gets two appearances.
Oh.
Black Friday and Thursday at the end of the season in, I think, Cleveland. So all things considered, it's a great schedule. It's much better. The matchups are much better than last year. And now, they've got to play the game. So hopefully most of these games will be compelling.
That was Al Michaels on the Pat McAfee Show earlier this week. And I hope these matchups are better on Thursday Night Football. We do not need another Broncos-Colts rematch from the Thursday Night Football game this past year that was just absolutely horrendous. But now the NFL has given itself just a little bit more flexibility. Now they're allowing flexing on Thursday Night Football, and also not every single team is guaranteed a Thursday Night game. And when this was initially talked about, when it was initially kind of proposed as something that was going to be voted on at the NFL owners' meetings going on this week, I said, this is a horrible idea. It's such a slap in the face to the players. Like, don't tell me that you care about player safety and then all of a sudden you're going to make a player on short notice play on a short week and turn around and, travel a long way on Thursday Night Football. Don't tell me that you care about the fans when you are going to change up the schedule for people who wanting to travel and making hotel arrangements.
See, that really, to me,
work arrangements. That's what I initially thought. Like, this, if you say that your number two, your top two priorities are player safety and fan experience, well, what a slap in the face to the things that you say that you care about. Because clearly you don't. Clearly you care about money. Clearly all you care about is making Amazon happy. And I don't blame Amazon for being a little unhappy for some of the matchups that they got this past season. But to be honest with you, seeing how a lot of these, how the specifics of the Thursday night flexing, what the amendments look like, it's really not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Because it's just weeks 13 through 17.
Okay.
So it's not like every single week if you get tickets to a Thursday night game or a Sunday game that you're going to be on your toes. Maybe it might get changed. Maybe it might get switched to Amazon on Thursday night. So it's just weeks 13 through 17. And each game gets at least 28 days notice from the league office if the game is going to be flexed.
28 days?
Almost a full month.
Okay. So I did not know.
That to me... If I'm a player,
you could.
That's enough
you
time
could
to
flex,
get prepared,
and then you'd want to deflex, like you know what I mean. Like you
right.
might flex 4 weeks out and say this is going to be a great game,
and then
wait a minute, the other game was better. The other game, the original game was the one we should have stuck with.
It just
that's,
kind of
that's
defeat the
happen.
Purpose.
That's going to
totally
happen.
Totally will. Like let's look at weeks 13 through 17 because there is a doozy of a matchup in here. So week 13, Seahawks at Cowboys. Probably going to be a pretty decent game.
Could be. I mean, you got the Cowboys. 14. You're going to have an audience. We know that.
It's the Cowboys. Yeah. That game will probably stick.
Yeah. Even if they stink, there's still always a lightning rod when we're talking Cowboys.
It's the Cowboys.
Yeah.
It's the Cowboys. Patriots at Steelers week 14. Could be okay. Could be awful.
People love to see the Patriots get smoked, even if they're bad. Right?
That is true. People do love to hate the Patriots.
Yeah.
Everyone outside of New England, that is.
Right.
Chargers at Raiders, week 15. Week 16, Saints at Rams. New Orleans and L.A., don't make hotel arrangements because that game is getting flexed. And then final week of the season, Jets at Browns. Aaron Rodgers, superstar quarterback. So that's what you're dealing with, weeks 13 through 17. Some of those
could
be flexed.
Weeks 16 and 17 especially, you never know. Until you get at least 4 weeks out. I mean, that's going to be the interesting part of this equation is the four-week out rule. I did not realize that was part of it. Because
I think that's enough time to get your ducks in a row.
It is, but so much can change in 4 weeks. Just think about if you flexed the Titans last year with 4 weeks to go and said, well, wow, we want the Titans late. They're 7-5, and they're going to be right there. They're probably going to win the division. And then you saw what happened. We know what happens.
Yeah.
So... something like that is bound to happen for at least one of these things. You can try all you want, but that's the beauty of the NFL. It's what makes it so compelling is the unpredictability.
Right.
A lot of times.
Week.
Yes.
So it does
so
kind of defeat
I do wonder if it's going to be worth it to do this for 13 through 17. Like week 16 and 17, I get it. What, from a coach's standpoint, though, I would really be concerned moving a game to Thursday, there's such a difference in preparation and stuff like that. But I guess, I mean, you do have the time to know that that's going to happen. I just wonder if at the end of it, we're going to say, you know, that was a good move. Everybody was happy. I mean, even Amazon. Is Amazon going to get that much more out of their investment with better games by doing that to where it's worth the belly aching of the coaches, the player safety issues, concerns that we're going to have here? I don't know.
But I think the belly aching of, at least mine, of the player safety and fan experience, 28 days is enough time for coaches to prepare what they want to do that week, for players to prepare their bodies. And I know that everyone is different, but 28 days to make changes to a trip, if you need to change your hotel, if you need to let your boss know you're going to be out for one day, if you need to make plane arrangements, that seems like enough time. And there's going to have to be a little bit of a give and take here. The NFL is going to have to risk some things happening within those 28 days, a quarterback getting hurt, whatever it might be, knock on wood. The NFL is going to have to give and take with that a little bit. The fans are going to have to give and take a little bit of, hey, you get 28 days, okay? You know, that's all we're really giving you. I think that's a fair amount of time for players, coaches, and the fans that are traveling. But I also think about it, the fan that stays home and watches the games, this is the best possible thing for them. Because how many times have we gotten stuck with just a cheeks matchup on Thursday nights?
But somewhere in there, it's going to, like, you worry about, you look at the other partners, right? They're going to lose, presumably, on CBS or Fox. They're going to lose a game here and there that they would rather have. Like for me, look, this is just my perspective. I don't know how many other people share this, but I don't watch the Thursday night games nearly as much because usually the Predators are playing on Thursday night,
yeah.
Like for me. And I like watching the other games. Like, I'm, you know, there's NBA games, there's college basketball games after a certain point. Like, I like carving out time. I don't feel compelled always to watch the Thursday night game other than, you know, my fantasy team, or if the Titans are playing, or if it's a game that involves the Titans, then you certainly want to go. But usually I'm working on Thursday
You're
night
busy.
Regardless.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many. So I'm not. I like the games on. I like having, personally, a good array of games to watch on Sunday, right? If I'm going to maneuver and say, you know, this is a good game, watching more than one game, I like soaking it up on Sunday. So you take that away with Thursday night to begin with. So mm-hmm. I'm not usually worried if there's a dud on a Thursday, but I know other fans probably do that. Obviously, Amazon wants for what they're paying. I'm curious why they were able to get this away from the other partners, right? Are they paying that much more?
I think so. I think they're paying that much more. That
so much more than like CBS and NBC or and NBC and everybody can say, wait a minute. We're not giving you these games.
What about we're paying? More enough to be able to say, hey, for 4 weeks out of the season, I guess it's technically 5 weeks, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 5 weeks out of the season, we want the option to at least get better games on our air. I think that because they're not, I really don't think that it's demanding too much. They're not asking every single week to flex it. It's the when it's crunch time, when there's going to be divisional races, when there are going to be teams really making a push for the playoffs, when there are games that really matter, you know, superstar quarterback versus superstar quarterback. I think that Amazon is paying enough to be able to at least exercise the money flex muscle and say, we want a better game. We need a better
game.
The
leverage. They had the leverage to do it.
Because they were laughable games.
I'm curious how that went, though, with the pushback from the other partners. Saying, hey, man, we already got a flex to NBC late in the season for the Sunday night games and all of this. Like, ESPN doesn't – they don't flex Monday night games, do they? Does that happen at all?
They do flex Monday night games. They late in the season? They definitely flex Sunday games.
Sunday, for sure. We know that. That's been happening for a good while.
Do they flex Monday games? Nick, do you know?
I think they have previously, haven't they? I don't think they've really done that a lot lately.
I don't know.
I don't think that they did that this past season.
Maybe ESPN doesn't pay enough for them to be able to flex the Amazon muscle, the Bezos money.
Okay. Now let me ask another question. The 28 days. All right. So you and your crew, right? You got your buddies. You love to travel and watch your team play once or twice a season. You've got it all planned. You know, December 2nd, we're going to Nashville. We're going to go watch whoever play the Titans. We're going
to
live it up downtown. We're
going to
go wild. We're going to go on those barges. We're going to drive all the locals crazy because we're taking over.
Okay, so 2023 will be flexed on Monday night, by the way.
Is that new?
As of May 4th, yeah.
Okay, so it is new. So Mondays are going to be flexed as well.
Wow.
Well, so do Mondays have the same concessions that Thursdays do? Maybe not.
Our crack staff is looking up this. So we got all kinds of things that could happen. So I guess this is still works to my point. So if you have, you got all your travel arrangements, you get your plane tickets, you get your hotels, how much does it screw you up if it's 28 days? Like if it's moved to Thursday and you get, maybe if you got a group of, let's say, six people, you're all fired up to do this as a group, you're looking forward to it, three of the people say, yeah, we can still do it, I'm still in, and then three people say, well, I gotta work, man, I can't do it on Thursday, I can't
tough
go Wednesday
noogies. That's what the NFL is gonna say to you.
That's kind
tough.
Of a bummer.
It is kind of a bummer, but I would say if you're planning to go to a game between weeks 13 and 17, book a hotel from Thursday to Sunday. You know, book a flight from that gets there on Thursday that leaves on Sunday. I feel like 28 days is enough, in minimum 28. It could be 40 days. I don't know. Who knows?
Sure. And
to
Monday,
make arrangements to your flight or to your hotel.
Yeah.
And also, let's remember here, the NFL doesn't care about the individual fan and their hotel arrangements. They don't care about the flight arrangements. They really do not care. As much as they say that they do, we know that they do not. They are getting money for it. It's better for the NFL and their corporate partnerships. That's the only thing the NFL really cares
and I can
about.
See,
but
the Titans aren't looking out for the other team's fans. Like, I get that part.
Right.
But the league
But it might
itself.
Be good for the stadium fund. More fans start to come in, rent some hotels on Broadway.
Yeah, the tourist department is like, bring them on.
Yeah.
Like, we want people.
We want Thursday games.
What'd you find out, Nick?
Monday, just to add on top of that, it's a 12-day notice. So if
for
you
how many weeks? at the end of the season?
Looks like it's for
13 through 17 again?
12 to 17, yeah.
Okay.
At least Mondays, you don't have to prep for a short week the week before. Your week after is going to be messed up a good bit, but at least that game week of your preparation, that's not thrown off. Like, your Monday's your Monday, your Tuesday's your Tuesday. Thursday nights, your Monday's your Tuesday, your Tuesday's your Wednesday, so on and so forth.
So CBS and Fox are the ones that are sitting there going, okay, we got flexing now for Amazon, we got flexing for ESPN, we got flexing for NBC. What about us? I wonder how much it affects their viewership. Or is it just basically, look, we got our windows, people are going to watch in our windows, even if there are some duds in there.
They could just look at it like, the game that's going to get flexed, or primetime games.
It's really the doubleheader. Like, whoever, the second game of a doubleheader is often what they're really shooting for the big audience for.
Right. It's usually one of those regional games, or, you know, a CBS 3:30 game. It might hurt CBS, but the NFL might use this in negotiations and say, in your next, you know, in our next contract talks, do you want to pay more and have that ability to flex? Because that's what the NFL is looking like. Money will talk for the NFL. They can arrange rules and change rules as long as you cough up the cash for it. I didn't think that Thursday night football would ever get to this point. I thought it was a pretty solid deal going, that it was mutually understood with fans and with players and coaches. And I'm sure players and coaches absolutely hate playing Thursday night games.
I just don't like the big game being on Thursday night. I like the big game being on Sunday. That's just me.
I think that the Sunday night game, either 3:30 or the Sunday night game, should be like Chiefs Bills or some game like that, like Green Bay against Tom Brady, games like that. I agree with you, but I like Thursday night games. I do like end of my week on.
You
a,
can't get enough. We cannot saturate. Thursday. That's the thing about the everybody believe. Like, I remember Mark Cuban saying this about 15 years ago. He would say, eventually, they're going to saturate themselves, and people are going to get sick of it. And he was basically saying, look, leave us some of the other days. Come on, share the wealth a little bit. Take your days, mm-hmm. take advantage of it, but don't try to skip. And D-Mace has been saying this too. They're going to try to get every night of the week at some point. I hope we don't get to that.
Tuesday night.
But how
football.
Much is enough? Like, how much chocolate cake? Like, you love chocolate cake, but if I just give it to you every day, at some point you're going to say, I got to take a break. You know, we're not there yet. We're not there yet.
You can never have enough football.
I mean, I get to that point. Like, there's a point where I'm just like, I want it on Sunday. I'm okay with it on Monday night. That's me. I never was a big fan of Thursdays, but I'll watch if I got nothing else to do, et cetera. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm different than some.
Let's get some of your thoughts on this coming up next, plus some more rules coming out from the NFL owners' meetings. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game, Nashville app. A little update from Hoover, Alabama, as the SEC baseball tournament is underway. South Carolina whooped Georgia 9-0. The Vols are now underway with Texas A&M 0-0 in the top of the first. Two outs.
So far, no rain.
Don't say it loud, Willie, because they're going to hear you, and the clouds are just going to open up, and it's going to be an absolute
never
storm.
Fails.
Every single year in Hoover, it is a horrendous weather. Just broke down the Thursday night flex rules and whatever you want to call them, amendments that they voted on at the NFL owners' meetings. I really don't think it's horrible. It's not the best situation for everyone involved, players, coaches, and fans, but I think they really did their best to accommodate for everyone. The second thing that I saw here, Willie, did you see where the draft is going to be held in 2025?
I did not.
I will give you one guess.
Wait. Can I tease it for Willie?
Don't give it away.
I need a hint. I don't know.
Wait. Caroline wasn't here, so I think this could work. So we talked about props, Willie. A certain fan base uses a prominent prop in the NFL. There's a few, but I want to see if you can guess. Because there are some crazy fans.
You're gonna be mad at yourself when you find
Pittsburgh?
Out.
Ooh, that's not
towel.
A bad guess.
That is a good guess. Green Bay.
The
Green
Cheeseheads.
Bay?
Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Huh. Not Milwaukee. Okay.
We're going to have a draft in Green Bay.
They're going to triple the population in Green Bay.
Seriously. Seriously. The 32 players drafted in the first round exceeds the population of Green Bay, Wisconsin. What do you even do in Green Bay?
Like, I can see Milwaukee in the summer. You got the Brewers. You got fun, beer drinking, brat eating.
Milwaukee's a fun city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Green Bay, like, I honestly, I can't really speak. I've never been to Green Bay.
I don't want to go to Green Bay.
I won't be going to the draft in Green Bay. Nothing against them, but I don't think I would ever go to a draft anyway, no matter where it was. But that's interesting.
I would like to go to a game at Lambeau. I take that back. That's a bucket list.
Okay. No question. Yeah, that's a whole different thing.
But I don't want to go to Green Bay just for funsies in April to watch guys walk across. You can't even do anything in Green Bay. Vegas, Miami, even Kansas City. Okay, I get it. You know, fun cities, whatever. Green Bay. Bay. What an anticlimactic draft. Hmm. Let's say 2025. I don't even know who's, you know, eligible for the draft in 2025. Let's say, who is it? Joe Milton. I think he's in 2024. It doesn't matter. Joe Milton, number one overall pick. Come on down, walking the stage in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
It seems like they'll be building some infrastructure for that. Like,
what
where
other infrastructure
would
in Green Bay could hold and support a draft? Lambeau Field?
These are all the questions. I don't know.
Very odd. Hmm. Very strange. But Green Bay did play, were they in London or Germany this past year? They did play an international game, so that just kind of plays into when you play internationally or you do Hard Knocks or you kind of scratch the NFL's back, they'll scratch yours and give you something, a Super Bowl, a draft, like when the Titans went to London in 2018 season, and they hosted the draft in 2019. It is kind of I scratch your back, you scratch mine. But Green Bay for the draft, just boring, boring. But let's get into some of your thoughts on this, some of the rule changes in the NFL that have come down from the NFL owners' meetings this week. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jeff Texan says there's one reason and only one reason why the NFL is flexing Thursday night games. To get better games so they can get a higher price when the rights package to Thursday night football comes up for bid next time.
100%.
Everything's money motivated.
Oh, yeah.
It all is going to be money motivated.
And it supersedes everything else. It doesn't seem like there's ever checks and balances on that.
And I think we all know at this point, none of us are naive enough to believe Roger Goodell or the league when they say player safety, fan experience are our top priorities. Because it's just not. Your top priority is making money. And that's fine. The NFL is a profitable organization. The NFL prints money. But we all know, I think we all understand the NFL's number one prerogative is money. Same thing we talked about with conference realignment and TV deals. It's all money motivated. Throw the tradition and the geographical part of all of this away. It's all about money.
The practicality
it's
sometimes.
It's not practical. Exactly.
And like just for the NFL, though, it's sometimes I come back and I say, like, how much is enough? Like, how much is enough to where why tweak all these things and have people, you know, have to rearrange their schedules and the players have a short week? And how much aren't you making enough money?
If it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
But as soon as there are new opportunities to make money, they're going to take advantage of it. Looking at the conference realignment side of things, it's a boat race between the SEC and the Big Ten. Who can get more teams? Who can get more money? Who can have the better TV deal? And the NFL, it's the same way. How can we get more money out of these TV networks? How can we get more eyes on our products? How can we make our product even more desirable to throw more cash at it? It's what it's all about. It's the reason why the NFL is putting a playoff game on Peacock. It's to appease NBC and to get more cash out of NBC. That's all it is. Kyle Texan, about some of the rule changes in the NFL, says, I also like the idea of a kicker scoring 1 point for their team by splitting the uprights from a kickoff. It incentivizes more touchbacks. I had not heard that.
Well, for a long time, and I'm guessing this is still the rule, I remember in the early days of ESPN and my enthusiasm as a sports fan, oh my gosh, there's a channel that always has sports on. I'm watching this channel every day, all day.
24/7.
And so you got a lot of CFL games back then. And so I learned that if you don't get the ball out of the end zone on the kickoff, of course, the end zone is huge. Like the goalposts are on the goal line, and then the end zone's like 25 yards. So if you don't get the ball out of the end zone, it's a point. So a touchback is a point for the kicking team. So I have wondered about that. You know, how do you make it more interesting? That now that would be a pretty big thing if you could, if you put that rule in.
Yeah.
If you think about it, because we've seen it happen on occasion, right? A guy booms it through there, and you're like, oh my, he just kicked it. He kicked it through the uprights on the kickoff.
Like, huh? How about that?
Yeah, but, you know, extreme wind conditions early in the season, the ball travels a little farther than it does when the extreme cold hits, mm-hmm. so that would affect it. I don't know. It's interesting creative talk, but I just think we're going to the point where you're just going to put the ball in the 25 and just be done with the whole thing.
I feel like every single year kickoff and kick return rule changes and proposals come up.
All right, here's a question for Nick and those guys. You guys back there, how many kickoffs were returned for touchdowns last year? I bet it wasn't
how
very many.
Kickoff returns were
if it if the over under is set at last one and a half, I would take the under.
You. 1.5, you say?
I would say under 1.5.
I'm going to say the number is
look it up really
3.
Quick and then tell
not
me,
very many.
And I'll pass it along.
Not very many, but and that also brings in the player safety aspect of it. Of punt and kick returns are not very safe. I mean, you see players get hurt and injured all the time on kick returns and punt returns. But we'll get the answer to that question of how many punt returns were returned for a touchdown,
like
which
punt,
is a good question.
The punt is something I don't think you could ever do away with the punt.
Or
like it's going to be fourth down.
Right.
So the punting, you will still have that. Even though the punters are so good now, they kick it so high, so far, the directional.
The hang time.
So it's harder to return a punt for a touchdown than it used to be. But you still have to have the punt return. But the kickoff return, like they're so good and they've tweaked the rules anyway and – like Tim said, there's so many injuries and concussions specifically on that. It's just like, why? It may not even be worth it. Like, the excitement of the kick return is almost gone anyway.
Six?
There were six. Okay.
That's surprising to me.
So maybe now the next step is how many were there 20 years ago before all these rules? Were there more? I bet there were probably more, I would guess.
All from Derek Mason.
D-Mace. He had a couple.
He did have a couple. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Updates from Titans OTA is coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.